Dobiash, real four. You were describing the work done in the quarries.
Oh yes, so some of the prisoners were scraping the earth with picks and shovels and loading the earth to the wagon, little wagons, and then those were carried away. When they reached the granite, then other commandos used to come in, drill holes, and use dynamite to break up the granite in the quarry. Coming up from the camp was one of the most difficult and most murderous tasks I have ever encountered. All prisoners were asked on the way back to pick up a stone and carry the stone on the 186 steps to the top. The scramble was everybody wanted a small stone. They were not always small stone, and some of them were landed up with very heavy stones which they couldn't possibly carry. If somebody took a small stone, the SS were watching, sorted them out, and up because they had small stones and they had to go back and pick a bigger one. They were not all of us were, of course, young as I was. At that time, I was 26, 27 years old, 28. Some of them were middle-aged, and there were even those who were nearing 50. Those, of course, didn't last many days. They simply could not carry. They could not run the steps down, and they could not carry the heavy stones up to the top. When we reached the top of the stairs, we had to unload or leave the stones on the sides and continue to the camp. I mentioned before that there was a Strafkommando. The Strafkommando used to go up and down regularly all day. They had wooden loaders tied on their backs, and they were loaded with very heavy stones, which they had to carry up and go unload and come down again and carry another load. That task was so exhausting that most of them simply could not survive more than a few days. There were some, I hear, who survived several weeks, but they must have been extremely strong. Because, first of all, the food was so insufficient, so miserable, that we started to get weaker and weaker. We lived in conditions absolutely inhumane, and we were dirty from working in the camp. Our feet were bleeding. We got infections, and obviously, through the infections, we were soon incapable of working. My luck was really, and that's the reason why I survived, was that I got so infected in my feet that I had to go to the so-called Revier, which was a small hospital, to clean up and stay for a few days until my wounds healed. When I was there, I met two people to whom I owe my life. The name of one was, both were Poles, former officers in the Polish army. One of them was Franciszek Poprawka, who was there as German because he came from the part of Poland where the Poles spoke both languages, and in spite of his Polish name, he came as a German, and due to that, he had certain advantages which he again used to tremendous benefit to his fellow prisoners. The other man was Kazimierz Rusinek, also a Polish officer, well known to the Poles. Everybody had tremendous respect for that man, but he was in the camp under a different name because had he been there under his real name, he would have been killed right from the start. He was in the camp as Rushin and not Rushinek. But his original name, which he took up again back after the war, he survived, was Rushinek. I met Kazik Rushinek while I was in the camp, and we became friends through a coincidence, which shows that not always, but sometimes helping somebody else can be of tremendous benefit without knowing it. I was still stronger than some of the sick people in the barrack, and one day a neighbor of me, a Frenchman, was so weak that we thought he was dying. But he was a young man, or otherwise strong, but he had tremendous diarrhea. I was so sorry for him. It was not a pleasant task, but I kept washing him and helping him. While I was doing it, Kazik Rushinek. Bye. And saw me, and he said, when you finish, I'd like to talk to you. When I finished, I went to see him. He asked, what's your name, what nationality? And he picked up the card. All of us had cards which traveled with us, small card, Karteikarten in German, which showed our number, the name, profession, and date of birth. He looked the card, asked me, and we had a long conversation. He asked me why I was there, what I was doing. And when I finished, he shook my hand. And he said, I'll help you. May I stop? In the meantime, my wounds healed and I had to go back to work. At that time, there was nothing that Polish man could do for me, but he said he was going to watch the situation, and if there ever was a possibility of getting me out of Wiener Graben, he would certainly do that. I believed he would, because by several discussions I had with him, I noticed that he was a very strong man mentally. He was a dedicated man. He was an enemy of the Nazis and an officer throughout. I had to go back to the granite quarry, and I had to change commandos. At first, I thought it was disastrous because I had to work away from the main camp. But then I realized that we had to scrape the earth only and not load heavy stones on the wagonettes, I finally realized that it must have been something, again, my friend did to transfer me to a better commando. This commando almost finished my life, and I would like to tell the story. One rainy day in the autumn, 1942, we were working in that particular commando. It was raining, it was cold, we were drenched and hungry. Not far from where we were working, on a hill up, there was a farm, Austrian farm, and we noticed that when the wind came from that side, we smelled pigs. They must have been breeding pigs there. But that was outside the camp, and the line in between was an invisible line with the so-called Postenkette. That's a Postenkette means line, undefensed line, with sticks in the ground, and every 50 yards or so a wooden turret where SS were watching with machine guns. While we were working, two SS men with machine guns came to our commando. If an SS came, all of us had to throw whatever we had, spoons or for security reasons, take off our caps, stand at attention and wait. They came down and they appeared to be very friendly. They were talking at first to each other, then they came in front while we were standing at attention. They said, "We are going to form a new commando of workmen who would go to every day from the camp to the farm and over there." They motioned where the farm was, to feed pigs. "We need men, or häftlinge, no, we were not called men, prisoners, who, first of all, must speak German. Secondly, they must know how to feed pigs. They must be from the agricultural community." Well, pretty well everybody wanted to feed pigs. For obvious reasons, I suddenly saw that my chance of survival came. I could stay indoors, and I could even eat with the pigs. So my hand went up, and I announced that I speak, first of all, speak German. Not everybody spoke German. There were a few Spanish prisoners in that particular commando, and they spoke broken German, and they also volunteered. So the SS went suddenly and said, "Those who speak German, in front, form a line." So we came. And they came from one to another, started asking questions. When they came to me, I said I was born on a farm, and all my parents did, they were feeding pigs. Obviously, it was not true, but I lied because I wanted to save my life. Well, they left me in the line. They finished. When they finished, one of them poked, one of the SS poked the other one, and said, "You have too many, du hast zu viele," in German, "you have too many." They were about 26 of us. They wanted only about 20. So they went back through the line, looked at everybody, and pushed some back. When he came to me, he pushed me out of the line. I immediately started my hand up. I said in German, "I am good worker, I'm strong, and I come from the farm." And the SS simply came to me and tried to kick me in my genital. But as I saw quickly his foot coming, I turned around and he kicked me to the side and kicked a hole in my side and pushed me back. I can show you the wound there. Well, I was out. When they counted finally, they counted them about 20, they said, "Rechts um ohne Tritt Marsch," in German, "turn right without march up the hill to the farm. We start immediately." The others, we had to go back and start working again. My tears were running through my eyes because I saw my chance of survival was gone, but besides, I was wounded. I was bleeding. Painful from the kick. So we went back to work, and we saw the commando going to feed the pigs. But suddenly, we stopped petrified. We heard the sound of two machine guns. As soon as the commando, the prisoners, crossed the invisible line, they were outside the camp, and they were mown down by the machine guns from the turrets. They were dead, lying there. I could have been one of them. The SS started to laugh. They turned back and ran to us. Again, we stood at attention. When we were sitting, they came, looked at us, and they said, "Who else knows how to feed pigs?" That is a story I shall never forget as long as I live. So those men died. I have the picture, if you wish. It was photographed afterwards. And as an ordinary, normally under such conditions, when prisoners were chased out, this time they were not chased. They went on their own will, thinking they were going to feed the pigs. this decision of the SS was shot while trying to escape. Auf der Flucht erschossen in German. So I hardly made the steps going to the camp. I was lucky I had only a very light stone to carry, because with the wound I couldn't have carried a large one, I would have perished on the steps. When I came to my barrack, the story, of course, went through the camp, and after we were dismissed from the Appellplatz, Kazimierz Rusinek came to my barrack. He said, "What happened?" I told him what happened. He said, "Show me." I showed him my wound. He said, he went to the Blockschreiber, that means the one, "Give me his card. He's going to the Revier, to the hospital." He took me to the hospital. There I stayed until my wound healed. When my wound healed, the two men in charge, the two Poles, gave me a job of cleaning and in the barrack, and thus again I was under the roof. With their great help, I found out that the new Revier, or the new hospital, was being built underneath the main camp. They were new barracks, and it was specifically called Russenlager, which it wasn't, a Russian camp, because before there were some Russians there, until it was changed to the new hospital with barbed wire and dogs running around in the narrow two parts of the barbed wire. And there I was sent as a Blockschreiber drei. That means a Schreiber or writer or official on barrack number 3, where I had to count the prisoners for every appel, that means when the prisoners were counted in the morning and in the evening, keep track of all the diseases which the prisoners had. I had to announce the dead, how many dead every night. Of course, there were dozens of dead every night. They were carried out and thrown, the dead people were thrown outside. And this meant that, first of all, I had a little more to eat, and I was working under the roof. That saved my life. After a few months working, we noticed that several SS men came down and walked through the barracks counting the people. We understood from the discussion that the barracks were overcrowded. The doctor in charge spoke quietly to several SS men, and then all of them left. Next morning, the SS man by the name of Klein Günther, SS Hauptscharführer Klein Günther, came to the camp. And among others, came also to my barrack number 3. And in my presence, he looked at the wounds of several prisoners. Then he asked me to bring out the cards, looked at the number of the prisoner, and asked me to take the card out, which I did. He selected a group of cards, gave them to me separately, and he said he will call me. He went to the one of the barracks, which was like a surgery, called me there, and in German asked me, "Bring these," gave me the cards. He said, "Bring these prisoners in a group, stand them there, and bring them in one at a time." I still had no idea what was happening. I brought the first one in, and he asked the prisoner to strip to the top, lie down on it. The SS man, by the way, wore, even though he was not a doctor, he wore a white coat like a doctor. he tried to touch him. Then he asked me to translate, ask the prisoner to lie down. When he lied down, he looked at me, the SS looked at me, and he said, "What you are going to see, you will never say. If you do, you are a dead man." Then he counted the ribs on the left-hand side, between third and fourth, I believe. Then opened a little cabinet. Out came just like a, it's called Spritze, like an injection tube, about that size, about three quarters of a foot.
A hypodermic needle,
but big, with a, you know, like, it contained about half a liter. He opened a bottle, pushed in, and pulled out the contents, which afterwards I found out was gasoline. Then he, he gave the prisoner had to breathe the
gas,
yes, and count. When he stopped counting, SS Hauptscharführer Kleinginter came and pushed between the ribs, pushed the needle in, and pressed the gasoline in. He pulled it out, waited, tried his pulse, and the prisoner was dead. So he called two orderlies, also prisoners, to take the body out and throw it on the side. And he asked me to bring the next one in. Like that, on that day, he killed about three dozen people, men. That was the first time. I could not sleep. I was so upset, terrified, horrified, how a man can kill in cold blood. I saw people being killed, shot, but in cold blood like that, to shoot somebody was something which left a scar I shall never forget. That was not the only time.
So the petrol was injected into the
heart? Injected into the heart and stopped the heart, and he killed them like that. That was repeated several times at different intervals. I don't believe there was any other reason, political or otherwise, to kill certain prisoners, because they were of different nationalities, but they were mostly prisoners who were really ill. And the hospital was overcrowded. It was just one way of getting the overcrowding down.
What was the demeanor of the man who did it?
Absolutely nonchalant, just like if he was cooking bread, baking bread. Just absolutely, completely couldn't care less. Joking even about it. Joking about, well, that will do for today. And of course the prisoners who came in, they didn't know what was going to happen. And they were on the other side, they couldn't see the other side. The corpses were taken away, cut to the crematorium, and burned.
So they just had to passively let it happen?
Yes. Yeah, no resistance, nothing. They didn't know what was happening. They thought, definitely, I have no doubt, they thought that they were being examined by a doctor. Well, one of the things of inhumanity, which even now, if you tell somebody, I doubt that people would believe me. And I swear, as I'm sitting here, that what I'm telling you is the truth, and nothing but the truth. Well, may I stop for a while?
What was the doctor's name?
The doctor in charge of the prisoners was Dr. Krebsbach. We used to call him Spritzbach. Spritz means the spritze or the injection. He was the inventor of killing the prisoners by this method.
What happened to him after the war?
After the war, he was tried and he was sentenced to death by hanging. He was hanged by the American occupying forces right after the war. I stayed in the hospital till about summer 1943. After the 1944. After the invasion by the Allied forces, the SS became very irritable and even worse than they were before. We had the feeling that they started to try to cover up their crimes just in case the Nazi Germany would lose the war. But I have still had a feeling at that time that they were absolutely sure that they would still win the war. When in 1944 the situation became, as we called it in the camp, pressant, that means nervous, my friends knew that I was probably at that time the only witness of the murders I mentioned before, and they thought I was in great danger of being executed. So they got in contact with the head of the organization in the upper camp and contacted a man by the name of Kurt Pani. Kurt Pani was the Lagerschreiber, that was the highest position a prisoner could hold in the camp. He had a tremendous power, but he never misused his power. He always used it to help other people, to help and save lives.
He was a Czechoslovak?
He was a Czechoslovak too. His number two was a Czech of Austrian nationality, Hans Marschalek. After the war, Kurt Pani soon died of a heart attack, obviously brought up by his activity in the camp. But Hans Marschalek returned to Austria, lives now in Austria, is retired, and he had a very high position with the Austrian government. He retired court counselor, as it was, the translation goes, of the police in Austria. I keep in touch with him, and he is a big organizer of the meetings in the former concentration camp, Mauthausen. When they realized my danger in the camp, they knew that the only way to save me would be to transfer me from the